I haven't been here 12 months, and there's been an awful lot of changes in the organization, people-wise, at Habitat. I'm sure that's something that is very unusual, but it sounds like from the people I have visited with over the last 10, 11 months, you have a very strong board and will continue to operate the nonprofit very well.
I think that's the case, and as I kind of said in the last sentence of that news release, you know, the key thing is that Habitat continues to pursue its mission. We'll be approaching our 200th house, probably do it this summer or early fall, and we just had this very successful fundraising breakfast that successful from two reasons. Not only the, you know, 450 plus people who chose to come out and support us at the breakfast, but we had challenge grants on the table, and we managed to meet the contingencies of those challenges. So I think people understand that the nonprofit world is a difficult world, that you end up with lots of very good staff, but people also, their priorities change, their needs change. The community has experienced some difficulty in a number of nonprofits with regard to some legal issues involving employees, but that's not the case with Tory whatsoever. But that's been in our recent past, and you deal with them and you move on. And the Habitat brand is an extremely well-accepted and powerful and supported brand in this community, and that's been the good news.
And looking at the history of the organization, when I read that was formed in 1989, that was right at the beginning of the last positive economic cycle, and I think that says a lot about Habitat locally, where you're able to get a strong foundation built to be able to weather this current downturn, and as hopefully we're bottoming out economically, and you had such a successful breakfast that, to me, is a signal of much better things to come.
I would think so. I think, you know, we're impacted like everybody else with the economy. So people who might have given it a certain level before may be able to support us, but maybe it's a little bit less. But on the other hand, we've had some people who've given much more than they've given in the past, and we have new donors. We have people who are either just learning about the Habitat mission or are, you know, finding out about us in a way that they're willing to do more for support. But, you know, we raise somewhere in excess of $1.1 million a year.
And to be able to accomplish that during this current economic time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's been the challenge. And there are some grants that we get from state government. There hasn't been as much of that kind of funding. It's mainly been backing our loans to our mortgages to homeowners. We haven't gotten that same degree of support, so it puts more direct emphasis on the money that we raise and we use to build those homes. But the key thing is, and I don't know if you were at the breakfast, but Habitat kind of uses the tagline of changing lives. And it's really getting people to understand that while it looks like what we do is build homes, what we really enable people to do is change the fundamental way that they live and become net contributors to the society, not only in terms of the stability of the life they lead, the taxes they pay, the education they're able, better able to provide their kids. Kids do better who live in Habitat homes than on average in poverty situations. So the changing lives part is important. What you see is the houses we built. But what it really means is that in our community, we've impacted 200 families' lives. And for a community our size in the period of time we've been doing this, that's truly amazing. We're one of the largest small market house builders in the Habitat network in the United States.
I was going to ask about that. How unusual is this market size to the Habitat organization?
It varies. I mean, you've got the Planos and the Arlingtons and that kind of thing, and then you have the Houstons and the Austins.
When you mention Houston, Austin, yeah, and I consider Plano part of the Metroplex. To me, from a market standpoint, you know, you're talking about some of the largest metropolitan areas in the country, and then you get to Bryan College Station, of which there are hundreds of areas this size.
Right, and among those areas, I mean, I went to our state conference this last June, and people had told me that when they go around the room and ask how many houses has your affiliate built in the last year, they said there's always an audible somewhere between a gasp and how did you do it about Bryan College Station. And particularly because our environment's different. If you think of Austin, Houston, Dallas, they have a number of large corporate kinds of offices there, national headquarters, companies with major listings, you know, on stock exchanges and stuff like that. We don't have that here. We have a small number of those, but not very many. And so the way that we raise funds is quite different. And I must say, it's the, you know, we talked about living, coming to this community a year ago. The Aggie spirit is alive and well in College Station.
So what are the home building plans for the rest of this year?
We will complete in this budget year from July 1, starting this past July 1 through June 30th, we'll complete 15 houses. And what happens next year is dependent. Again, we're just starting in the sponsorship cycle for that year, but my guess would be it'll be a minimum of 15 in the next year.
And how does one go about inquiring if they would like to make a contribution, whatever that might be, whether it's cash or materials or even volunteering time?
Contact the Habitat office and we'll get you in touch with the right people. The other area, you know, you mentioned materials. In-kind contributions mean a lot to us in two kinds of ways. One, if it directly relates to things that we put in the house. So, for example, Acme Glass supplies us with all of the mirrors for the homes. And that obviously saves us money. But on the other hand, there are businesses in town and individuals in town who have excess goods or excess property, and they donate it to Restore. And through Restore, we sell that, and that cash contributes to the net operating of Habitat.
And then the process for selecting the next executive director, how much is the process different? How much is it going to be the same?
There was no reason to believe that Tori Wollen wouldn't have stayed with us a while. There were just a set of circumstances in her life where she made the decision it was best to resign. And we have a search committee. It was formed last night. Stephen Steele at Davis & Davis is the head of that search committee, and we should be live with announcements in the local paper and through our network and Habitat International and you know, nonprofit listservs that get that kind of information out. We should be live by early tomorrow morning with that. And then the process will be the same. We go through applications, we screen them, we try to create a short list, we do first rounds of interviews with people, and then that usually involves the search committee, and then from there, when we have a shorter list of folks, then we're involving the board and some people in the community to help us with that process.
And considering how successful the organization is, should have a pretty healthy list of qualified applicants.
I would think so. We did this last time. We had some good people in that pool, and certainly we would want to explore the availability of a couple people in that pool as well. But, you know, we have a lot of interest in finding someone who not only can manage staff, but is very comfortable in the fundraising environment, because the executive director, presidents of boards come and go, and boards come and go, but you depend on this kind of solid reputation that executive director represents, and being kind of the visible part of the organization in the community. But the interesting thing, having said that about our board and everybody else, this Habitat is a fairly large family of people, and I don't mean in terms of the people we build houses for, but a fairly large family of folks. We have lots of people who are there and we call on all the time to help us fulfill our mission. And, you know, we already know we've got a couple recommendations from people in that network of people we might want to consider.
Anything else listeners ought to be caught up on?
No, I think, you know, the key thing for your listeners is to understand that we've just had a series of back-to-back kind of circumstances, and it's more or less the bulk of them have been unrelated. And so, you know, it'd be easy to get the impression of instability and things aren't going well, but if they go out to where we build houses, the houses are being built. I will tell you one story. I don't know how, you know, useful this is as a soundbite, but last Saturday I emceed a house dedication, which is the final step where we turn the keys over to the family. And an hour before that, we had had the beginning of a wall raising. And you do the first step, and people start going up to the slab, and the walls start going up. And then just a couple doors down from where these two things were happening, there was a house that is the Aggie Habitat-sponsored house, where they're about halfway done, and the students from the university, along with our construction people and the homeowner, were putting sidings on the house. And so I was standing there, and I was in a position to be able to see all three houses involved. And I kind of told the story that this really is what Habitat is about. We're starting houses. We're in a ministry that has to do with building houses, and there comes the time when a very, very deserving family is handed the keys and they're able to move on to the next stage of their life. And that was a pretty special moment.
And that's all you want to see continue?
That's what we want to see continue.